නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. Dear venerable brother, Dhamma friends, basically we were discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta, contemplation of diets. Basically, in this sutta, Buddha summarizes the whole Vipassana practice into 16 themes. Basically, we can recognize 16 themes, 16 topics, and using which actually we can streamline our practice. At the beginning, it would be difficult for us to understand how the whole practice could be minimized, how whole practice could be streamlined into this kind of thing. But later, as we continue our practice, there may be a possibility that one would recognize, okay, I can basically concern on this matter. I can mainly concern on this particular area. So likewise, one can recognize a certain area so that our vipassana can be properly streamlined, or we can say thoroughly considered. Now such 16 considerations, contemplations are now we are discussing. And first is the Four Noble Truths, where two truths are kept in the mundane side and the other two truths are kept on the supramundane side. When one contemplates the first two truths, then one may intend towards the understanding of the suffering available in this mundane, the worldly life. On the other hand, if one is sort of attuning oneself into the third noble truth and the fourth noble truth, when such thing is going on, one's mind may incline towards the Nibbana, the cessation. And then the second one is based on the acquisitions, the upadhis. So we acquire various upadhi, we acquire various acquisitions, expecting certain satisfaction in order to gratify senses, or you can say in order to maintain a self. But ultimately that very thing can become a suffering. So the practice is to recognize that identification, kind of self-recognition, and then abandoning it, letting it go. So that is the second one. And then we discuss about the third, that is on the ignorance. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of ignorance. If one is able to abandon ignorance, then one would be able to overcome suffering as well. Then the fourth one is based on the volitional activities, where different kinds of activities are there: bodily activities, verbal activities, mental activities, and all are volitionally conducted, and those can become the source of suffering. Yankinchi dukkhan sambhoti sabbang sankhara paccaya. So sankharas are the root cause of suffering. So this is how in this theme we are looking at. So how to overcome sankhara, or how to minimize sankhara, or ultimately how to calm down all the sankharas. Sabba sankhara samatha is a synonym for nibbana. And then we discussed about the consciousness. Whatever suffering arises, that happens because of the consciousness, and here it is the conditioned consciousness, the established consciousness, manifested consciousness, and that is the cause of suffering. If one is able to cease that, to stop that conditioned consciousness being generated, so that is another way that we can say that we are going to be free from suffering. And then we discuss about the contact. The contact is the cause of suffering. And then if one is able to cease that contact, stop that contact, abandon the recent contact, not allowing contact to happen, then there is no suffering. When we discuss about the feelings, feelings as the cause of suffering. Yankinchi dukkhan sambhoti sabbhang vedana paccaya. So feelings is another sort of easy approach, where one can recognize various different kinds of feelings. And again, when one recognize that and see their true nature, one become dispassionate about it, not grasping it, slowly abandoning it. So that becomes the path. And then craving. That is what we discussed last time. So, yankichi dukkhan sambhoti sabbang tanha paccaya. This is exactly the same in the Noble Truths, where second Noble Truth, dukkha samudaya saccha, where Buddha explained that as the craving. Dukkha samudayaṁ ariya saccaṁ yāyaṁ tanhā pono bhavika nandirāga sahagata tatra satra abhinandini sayyati idam kāma tanhā bhava tanhā vibhava tanhā. The three types of craving is considered as the cause of suffering. And here is the same thing, but taken craving only, singled out craving as the one thing, and that as the cause of suffering, and one recognizes that, and then one is trying to abandon it, relinquish it, then there won't be any suffering. Now we can go a little further. So next to craving is the clinging. So if you consider the typical formula, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, so in that path, we are vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upada. So if we continue to maintain certain amount of craving, that can lead to grasping. So one can grasp something. Now here, in the craving side, in the clinging side, where Buddha mentioned, yankinji dukkhan sambhoti sabbang upadana paccaya, ayang ekanu passana. So upadana, the clinging, grasping, is the cause of suffering. Upadānantveva asesa virāga nirodha natti dukkhasa sambhavoti ayan dutiyānu pasana. If one is able to abandon all the clinging, so then there won't be any suffering. So that is the theme of this ninth contemplation. Upadān, the clinging. Suffering originates from clinging, it conditioned by clinging. And if one is able to abandon clinging, then there won't be any suffering. And here Buddha further explained as verses, Upadana paccaya bahu bhuto dukkhang nigacchati jatasya maranang hoti eso dukkhasya sambahu. So this is what mentioned in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, where certain amount of suffering is there when one is grasping things. Actually, the next step is the bhava, that is the kind of existence, getting into a mental mood, getting into a mental state. You are born into a new mental state, a new state that you have arrived or you have become. So we can simply kind of simplify the term upadana as becoming. So we are trying to become something. So basically, clinging causes to become someone. So once you cling to something, once you grasp to something, then you become someone. So the bhava, the existence, is caused by grasping. So there's a new state and you love that, you prefer that, and now you want to grasp that, and ultimately once you grasp, you become that. Now, here actually we can little go further. We need to first understand what is upadaniya dhamma and what is upadana. So these are two things. These are not one thing, upadaniya dhamma and then upadanam. Katamecha bhikkave upadaniya dhamma, katamang upadanam. So Buddha explained the difference. Rupam bhikkave upadaniyo dhammo. Yo tatta chandarago tang tatta upadanam. So the rupa, the form aggregate, consists of various interesting, fascinating, wonderful things, and they are beautiful, and basically the mind can grasp that. So these beautiful things available, so that we can simply say as upadaniya dhamma. Things which can be subjected to a clinging. But they are not the clinging. The clinging is what actually arises in the mind, where to that particular object there is a kind of a attachment in the mind. That is a kind of a inclination in the mind, kind of interest in the mind. So mind become inclined towards that, attached to that, and then grasp to that. So that grasping part attachment part, inclination part happens in the mind, so that is what we call as the upadana. And similarly, there are various feelings. Those could be pleasurable feelings particularly, and to those pleasurable feelings we can attach, and the feelings are the upadaniya dhamma, and to which we can have certain inclination, attachment, grasping in the mind, so that is the upadana. So similarly, the perceptions, once we have, so that can become upadaniya dhamma, and to which we can have certain amount of desire, attachment, grasping, so that is the upadana which arises in the mind. So similarly, various intentions, various thoughts, mental activities, all can become a field of upadaniya dhamma, and where we can conduct an upadana, that is the grasping, attachment to that. Similarly, when we are using our senses, as we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, think, and all that external objects are the upadaniya dhamma, to which there can be an attachment, a desire, craving, grasping in the mind, so that becomes the upadana. And that is clear. And then another interesting area is the different types of upadana. So this is a very interesting area, and in a way fairly deep area, where Buddha categorized the clinging into four groups or four types. Chattarimani bhikkave upadanani katamani chattari. So there are four types of clinging available. What are they? Kama upadanam, ditti upadanam, silabbutu upadanam, attavadu upadanam. Some are in a way little easy to understand, so we'll start with something easy. Kama upadana. So what is kama upadana? So we all have certain desire to sensual pleasures, various sensual objects. Beautiful sights are there, so we all love to see that. Beautiful sounds are there, we love to hear that. Various smells are there, those are pleasant, and we like to smell that. And delicious food are there, so we like to taste that. And similarly, a good touch, a soft touch, or something that what you desire, so you like to go through that. So likewise, the kama upadana. And this is actually the cause of various conflicts. So people, everybody wants it, everybody likes it, and but ultimately the amount available is very less, so all are competing each other and ultimately hitting each other, killing each other because of this various sense objects. And to those sense objects we can have clinging, we can have grasping, we can have an attachment, so that is the kama upadana. Actually, this is explained in certain many suttas. Kamaraga abhinivesa vinibandha paligeda pariyutthana ajjosana hetu. So this is how Venerable Mahakachchana explained why people are having conflicts, why people are having arguments, why people are going to wars, battles. So he say kamaraga, now this sensual desire is there, so bound by kamaraga, bound by sensual desire, so actually they adhere to it. Once that kamaraga, the sensual desire is available in the mind, so without abandoning it, what we do is we adhere to it. We start too much getting closer to it. We allow the mind to be fully influenced by that, completely overwhelmed by that lust, that greed. And then we are completely bound by that, vinibandha. Then that will become kind of overwhelmed in the mind. And then it can become an obsession. So you are thinking too much about it, you are overthinking about it, the whole mind being sort of covered by that particular attachment, that particular object, related thoughts. And then ajjosana hetu, so that means you are completely in it, completely inside it, immersed in it. So you can't think out of that. You're completely, your mind is completely immersed in it. You can't see anything else. So this is the reason according to this sutta, Mahakacchana explains, kathyepi kathyehi vivadanti. Now these kathyas, the clan, different clans, different groups, different nationals, different countries, they are arguing each other, they are going to fight each other, conflicting each other, killing each other. Simple as that. So the kama upadana is in that sense not that difficult to understand. So in this sense world, so different kinds of sense objects are there, and they are not abundant, they are very scarce or very little, and as a result of that there are conflicts among the people, because everybody wants them, everybody are attached to that, everybody wants to acquire that. And then we can get on to the ditti upadana. So that is little stronger but difficult to understand. Kama upadana in a way little easier to understand, because that is quite obvious, where our minds have certain sensual desire, certain grasping, certain attachment, more appreciation towards very beautiful stuff, maybe material stuff. But on the other hand, ditti upadana, so that is where we get on to attach to various kinds of views in the mind. So those are actually not tangible, but unfortunately we attach to those intangible thoughts, views, conclusions, our observations, our ideas. So that is where kind of a strong attachment can happen. So that is where even ascetics can have conflicts. Now, say for example, monks, they were able to abandon the material things, whatever they had, whatever the possession they had. So they have abandoned all that beautiful, luxurious, expensive things. But unfortunately, even though they have abandoned that, among these ascetics there can be conflicts. Why? That is because of the ditti raga. It is not the kama raga, but the ditti raga. To various views they have attachments. One group says one thing, another group says another thing, and then these two groups can get into conflict. Say for example, one group can say, okay, the dawn time has to happen at this particular time. So they want to have a fixed time. Say 5 a.m. should be the dawn time. For monks, there's something called dawn time, aruna, where from that onwards, we consider as the kala, the proper time for one to eat. So other time is the vikala, it's improper time. So typically early in the morning, as the sun rises, the dawn happens. So what is the exact time? What is the exact time of the dawn? So people can have various ideas, various views about it. And so when that is there, so when two people or two groups have two opinions, so they can get into conflicts. So one group wants to win their opinion and another group wants to win their opinion. Ultimately, these two groups can get into even a war, because their ideas are different, their views are different, their maybe the conclusions are different, so they can get into conflicts. And sometimes they consider what they know or what they grasp as the true thing. To that level they have grasped that. So different views are there, and they consider their view is the best view. My view is the best view. Whatever else is completely inferior views. Their ideas are wrong. Their ideas are inferior. My idea, my view, my perspective is the best perspective. My view is the best idea, the best view. So this is how we grasp that. Unfortunately, it is not only the view then in coming to effect. Even we identify with that view, and the I also comes to the effect. The I, the capital I, the self also comes to the effect. We'll discuss that later as the fourth grasping. So the point is that when people are having different kinds of views, and they start attaching to that, they start holding that strongly, and without being able to abandon that, so that can cause suffering, that can cause grasp, that can cause various conflicts among various groups. And basically that kind of grasping is actually very difficult to abandon even. Now, say for example, if you have a little possession, so you have some money, probably you have some attachment to that. Maybe if your good friend asks that, probably you would be able to decide, okay, I'm going to give it. Might not be a big issue. But on the other hand, if someone wants to change your attitude, change your perspective, change your view, change your idea, that would be very difficult. Unknowingly, we are so attached to that. And sometimes our view may be completely wrong. And people may try to convince us, but we are not ready to give up. Because we are so attached to that view. Say for example, one group say, telling that the world is flat. And people, another group say they are coming with various ideas, various mathematical formulas, and then the photos, and this and that. So they prove that it is not flat, it is spherical. But the other group, if they want to attach, then they are going to conflict. So likewise, many different ideas are there in the world. So people are attached to that. We are strongly holding that. And we can argue. So this is how the grasping happens into various views. And this is what commonly available also. Say there are conflicts between the mother and the father, or the parents and the children, or between husband and wife, because they too have two views. Say husband says, I want to color wash using say green color. Say wife says, no, I want blue color. So their views are different. So their way of looking at things are different. So their conditioning in the mind is quite different. Now they can't come to an agreement. They can get into a conflict. So we are so attached to our views. We are so attached to our ideas. And when someone is trying to prove that our idea is wrong, useless, we are not ready to give it up. We are so attached to that our idea is the best idea. So my view is the correct view. All other views are inferior, useless views. So this is how we think. So this is how we attach to Ditti Upadana. And then we can discuss about the Silabbata Upadana. So Silabbata Sutta, there's an interesting sutta called Silabbata Sutta, where Buddha asks a very interesting question from Venerable Ananda. Sabbannukho Ananda Silabbatam Jivitam Brahmacharyam Upatthana Saram Sapalanti. Now Buddha is asking Venerable Ananda, are these all different kinds of Silabbata, all rituals, all observances, helpful, beneficial to this Brahmacharya life, beneficial to this celibate life, or we can simply say the spiritual life. So different rituals are there, various practices are there, various observances are there. Are they all useful to the spiritual life? Then Venerable Ananda says, Bhante, I can't give a definite answer for that. Na kevatta bhante ekan senati. I can't give a definite answer. I can't say a true false answer. Then Buddha say, okay, then please explain it further. And then Venerable Ananda give a very interesting explanation here. If something, any kind of ritual, any kind of an observance, maybe kind of a practice. So if one uses that, or if one observes that, one goes through that, then if your wholesome qualities are sort of going to downfall, you're losing that, and some unwholesome qualities are developing, then definitely that ritual, that observance is not a good observance. On the other hand, Venerable Ananda mentioned, assume that you are maintaining certain observances, certain rituals, and while you are continuing that, while you are conducting that, your wholesome qualities are improving, increasing, and your unwholesome qualities are decreasing. Then those rituals, those observances, those practices are useful. Now this is how he decides, so what is useful and what is not useful. So different observances are there. Say for example, you are simply offering flowers. You can say it's an observance, a kind of a ritual. So all your family members come together and they touch the flowers and they offer it to the Buddha and they do a little vandana, little chanting, a worship, and so that you are practicing daily. So someone can even criticize that, why are you doing this? You don't need it. You can simply practice meditation. Why are you offering flowers? So Buddha is not there. But if we consider the other side, so what are the benefits? So while you are doing that, your mind becomes very pleasant, your virtues are improving, your faith improving, you become very humble, you are maintaining certain amount of gratitude towards the Buddha, and as you are passing these flowers to the others, you maintain certain harmony among everyone, and your mind becomes very pleasant, everybody looks harmless, in a good harmony, so the family peace growing, and you are offering flowers. So even though it's a little ritual, but still it has very good qualities attached to it, very good qualities involved in it. So once you are continuing that, so you may gain something. So your wholesome qualities are improving. And probably as you are growing, probably you can even include certain vipassana into it. So you can see how these beautiful flowers ultimately become ugly, become completely faded away. And we might have to throw it, even though right now they are with fragrance, that also won't be available for a long time. Even though currently they are very colorful, ultimately they become completely faded away, discolored. So you can have a certain amount of reflection as well. So we are, even though it's a little ritual, one can use it successfully or in a beneficial way. On the other hand, say you are practicing a kind of a strong, what we call an austere practice. There are some extreme cases are there during the Buddha's time, and they are maybe still available right now. So sometimes people tend to follow these extreme practices. Say for example, you are going very early morning to the river Ganges, and you are immersing yourself there, extremely cold, and you are doing it every day as a ritual. If someone is asking, okay, why are you doing it? So I'm going to abandon all my desires, abandon all my defilements by simply doing this ritual. I'm going to abandon defilements. So you are going to wash it away. So these are rituals actually still available. And sometimes people are burning fire in front of them, behind them, onto their two sides, and sitting on the hot sun. So everywhere the heat is available. Through the heat they are going to cut off the defilements. So this is another ritual. Sometimes Brahmins are following. Now we need to see, have this ritual sort of allowed them to abandon certain defilements? Since they were doing that for a long time, have they improved themselves from the wholesome side, from the wholesome qualities? It's a kind of a suffering actually they are going through. It's a strenuous practice. Are these bringing us enough happiness? Are these bringing us enough satisfaction in the spiritual point of view? Now, these are the things, if we sort of do a kind of a reflection, we can understand, even though we are blindly following certain rituals, blindly following certain observances, there won't be much benefit. Now, it comes even to the morality. The morality is there. So one becomes, say, you start practicing 5 precepts. You start practicing 8 precepts. You start practicing 10 precepts. You become a monk, a nun. Now you have many precepts. Now you have to observe that. So there are, I mean, these rituals, or rather these observances, these precepts, at the beginning can become even a burden, because you don't know much about them, and your mind is struggling, and you want to see a movie, or you want to listen to music, you want to eat at night. So many things are there, but the precepts are preventing that. So at the beginning, it can produce certain amount of friction. But if you see the long time benefit, slowly, slowly, as one observes these precepts, so slowly, slowly, their lifestyle change, defilements become less, the mind become more calm. There's no any internal suffering. Rather, you start appreciating your conduct. So likewise, kind of a restraint happen mentally, even though your body and the speech being fairly restrained, its impact being now felt even in the mind. So likewise, even though certain rituals, certain observances appear like good, they might not have much benefits. On the other hand, there may be certain rituals, observances, little difficult to follow, but there may be good benefits of that. So likewise, therefore, even the sila one can grasp. So that's why it's called Silabbata Paramasa, where you are strongly grasping even the rituals, strongly grasping even the sila, even the precepts. So the only the kind of balance one starts to recognize only when one becomes a Sotapanna, a stream leader. Till that, the mind can shift into different sides. Either you lapse in precepts, you are sila, the morality, and then you get into troubles. On the other hand, you may get into strong attachment to sila, and that also cause a lot of suffering. So how to find the middle? So that is actually the practice. At the beginning, it is better in a way you observe as much as possible, particularly the precepts, the sila. But as we continue our vipassana practice only, we slowly start to understand the balance. When mind relinquish all grasping, when mind is able to maintain certain amount of freedom, so that is where slowly, slowly, we start to understand the balance. So till that, grasping can happen to various observances, precepts, or rituals, because we don't know the balance and we don't know the benefit. And this actually can we can consider certain observances, even like the Indriya Samvara. So some people, without any hesitation, they can do anything. They can use their eyes to see whatever they want. They can hear whatever they want. And there is no any kind of restraint. And they even condemn the people who are restraining their senses. But if we consider the long-term benefit, restrainment of the senses have far more benefits. And it allows one to maintain a very purified mind for a long time. So through the objects coming through these senses actually cause the mind to get defiled. But if you are guarding the senses, so that means so your mind being protected. So likewise, we can't see sometimes the results immediately, the benefits immediately, but in the Dhamma, so different explanations are shown how one needs to protect the sila, that slowly, slowly one may and one may understand that the limit of that, how to maintain that without grasping and without maintaining any kind of a lapse. And the last time, the last one is what we call as the attavadupadana. So attavadupadana. Actually, the previous three types are even sometimes seen in the other ascetic groups. So Buddha himself mentioned the other three types of upadana, what we already discussed, are sometimes discussed in the various other religious groups, not only in the Buddhist. But the last one, attavadupadana, is actually unique to the Buddha's teaching. Now, when one is continuing one's practice, actually we can see one is able to abandon certain defilements, able to abandon certain amount of grasping. Suppose that you are able to abandon silabbata upadana, so that means the silabbata paramas, that you are grasping certain rituals, observances, thinking that they give the complete purification, they cause the complete purification. Suppose that you are able to abandon that idea, and that happens only when one becomes a sotapanna, a stream winner, so then you are worked on that. And certain amount of kama upadana also somewhat diluted. When one becomes an anagami, the unreturner, so the silabbata upadana is not there, and already the ditti upadana is also not there. We can simply say the what we call as ditti upadana as the sakkaya ditti in this case. That is also abandoned. And when one becomes an anagami, even all the kama upadanas are abandoned. So sensual desires are no more. But unfortunately, another one remains. So that is the attavadupadana. Certain part of attavadupadana is also abandoned. So that actually comes under the sakkaya ditti, where you have a certain self-view. So that self-view also abandoned. But still very subtle view is there. Conceit is there. What we call as the asmimana. So that is only be able to abandon when one becomes an arahant. So this subtle upadana is something very interesting to discuss in certain suttas, like in the Khemaka Sutta. Very interesting discussion happened between the elder monk Khemaka and the other elderly monks, and they are having a good discussion, and basically they send a messenger to Venerable Khemaka and ask, are you considering aggregates as yourself? And he simply say no, and they conclude that he is an arahant. So he actually don't consider the rupakhanda, the form aggregate, as myself, as a person, as something substantial. So he has a thorough understanding. Similarly, he don't consider feelings as a self, as something substantial, as something with a core, with a self. He don't have such view as well. So similarly, about the other aggregates also, he mentioned, he don't have any kind of a recognition of those aggregates. But he concludes, but he honestly mentioned, he is not an arahant. And then he gives a very interesting simile here. And he say, if there is a fragrance coming from a flower, a lotus flower, a scent of a blue, red or white lotus. So, and he's asking from the other monks, how can you say from which part of that lotus this scent is coming out? The scent belongs to the petals, the scent belongs to the stalk, or scent belongs to the pistils. And they say no, they can't, they are saying no, it's not belong to any of those. Then how are you going to answer? And they say, answering correctly, one should answer, the scent belongs to the entire flower. So similarly, he mentioned, he don't regard any particular aggregate as I am, but the notion I am has not yet vanished from me. So that's a very, very interesting, very subtle point he is pointing out here, highlighting here. Even though one has no individual attachment, individual grasping to the aggregates, and he don't consider a particular aggregate as a self, in general, still certain little refined attachment is there to the I, to a person, and that is sometimes called as the asmimana or the conceit I am. The conceit I am. So we are having ourselves as a center of our full vocabulary. So we give a lot of prominence to this I. We give a lot of prominence to this myself. And with respect to myself, I do all the measurements. With respect to myself, I do all the different kinds of appreciations. Our whole vocabulary is built up on this kind of a grammatical structure. So they are yourself, myself, I are considered differently. So I is the best or I is the greatest, then you is the middle and the others become the third. So likewise, this I is something coming as the root cause of suffering. Asmimana. And basically he further mentioned that one needs to practice further, then only slowly you are able to abandon even that. And further interesting point we can recognize, so how this asmi happens, how this conceit I am happens. So there Venerable Ananda appreciatively mentioned that he learned a lesson from Venerable Pundamantani Putta. He mentioned upadaya auso ananda asmiti hoti no anupadaya. So if you have to get certain amount of self-view, conceit I am, then there should be some form of clinging. So without clinging, there can't be any kind of identification. So that's a very, very interesting point where Venerable Ananda highlights here. That also he learned from Venerable Punnamantani Putta, that we are generating a self, we are making a self by attaching to something. Say for example, you have taken a photograph and you are showing it. And as you show that, basically you can recognize your image, and immediately once you recognize it, you can simply say, oh, this is I am. So I am now comes to the picture. So you immediately recognize your picture, your image, your presence in that group. And now you are immediately waken up telling, oh, I am there. This is I am. How beautiful I am. Something like that. So basically attached to that form, that figure, that image, that is how we generate I. So similarly, the feelings, perceptions, formations, different consciousness. So all that appear like kind of a foundation, kind of a upadaniya dhamma, for that, so that actually we can have a kind of a identification with respect to that. So that actually, so we can't sometimes even notice that. What we simply can notice is that I have become a strong person. I have become a very special person. You strongly feel the ego. So once that is there, so that definitely already involved or went through some sort of grasping. Now what is the practice? Now practice is the, basically we can say the Satipatthana practice, one is continuing one's Satipatthana practice, where one looking at the body in the proper perspective, one investigate different feelings, one investigate various perceptions, one investigates different thoughts, maybe intentions. So likewise, the investigation is going through. One is continuing the vipassana practice. As we go through this vipassana practice, an interesting thing happens. Upadana khande sudhyabhya anupassino viharato upadane patikko leta santhati. So this is a very interesting phenomena. When in the Nagita Sutta it is highlighted, where when one is continuing one's practice, vipassana practice, now grasping becomes somewhat difficult. Rather than appreciating grasping, rather than holding to it rather than attached to it, your mind starts considering it as a burden and something that to be ashamed of. So this is a very interesting thing. Point is that you start seeing the things, seeing their true nature. Previously we haven't seen it. So we were simply superficially navigating without seeing the true reality. Now you are giving a good opportunity for the mind to learn through the direct experience. So as a result of that, now what happens, as you gain certain amount of knowledge, understanding, so that slowly says, okay, this is useless. You don't need to grasp it. You don't need to hold it. It is worthless. So that understanding comes, and then slowly the abandonment happens. Disenchantment happens. Dispassion happens. And as a result of Satipatthana practice, Buddha summarized, okay, you are able to maintain a life, a mind, completely free from any kind of upadana. Nacha kinji loki upadhiti. Whatever in the world, upadaniya dhamma in the world, no more becomes a cause of clinging, a cause of upadana. So this may be only for a short time, because still the latent tendencies are in operation. So, but either anyway, your mind may experience unattached state. Your mind may experience certain change in the perception where nothing is held on to. So further, actually, Buddha mentioned, if one is able to avoid any kind of grasping, and without being attached to something, without holding something, without welcoming something, if you are able to maintain a very relaxed, non-grasping, undefiled state of mind for a considerable period of time, one's mind becomes slowly familiar to that. So mind may start understanding that. Mind may start understanding its benefit. But at the beginning it would be difficult, because we are used to attachment, we are used to grasping, and therefore it would be very difficult at the beginning. But slowly, as we get familiarized with this state and what we have earned through vipassana, the anicitta state, unassociated state, non-grasping state, so that becomes one's dwelling slowly, and when one becomes familiar with it, so then mind slowly abandons everything else. So if one is able to abandon things without having any kind of an upadana, if complete abandonment has happened, then one can attain the arahantship. So all different kinds of upadana in that sense have to be abandoned. So in this Upadana Sutta, actually Buddha summarized that one has to practice Sila Samadhi Panya, the Noble Eightfold Path, in order to relinquish all the different kinds of attachments. On the other hand, the Satipatthana Sutta, the Satipatthana practice becomes the theme, and it can cause one to have unattached, non-grasping type of mind. So various different practices are there, but ultimately they all help the mind to get relinquished or get released, experiencing freedom. So once freedom is available, slowly that has to be cultivated, one has to be familiar with it, and basically then the attachments, the clinging become less and less. So mind starts preferring that, mind starts favoring that. Rather than grasping, now mind prefers the seclusion. Rather than having too many associations, now mind appreciates the unassociated state. So likewise, complete a revolution happens in the mind. Previously, thinks or considers things differently, but now it considered things differently. The way of thinking become completely different. The attitude completely different. So in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, so basically Buddha mentioned, so how upadana causes bhava, the existence. So once a certain grasping happens, so how you are born to something, how you become something, so that actually causes suffering. And if you are born to something, it's going to end. It may be a mental state, but it's going to end. It may be a physical thing, but that's also going to end. So whatever you think, whatever you grasp, ultimately change. Tasma upadana khaya samadanyaya pandita jati khayang abhinyaya nagacchanti punabhavanti. So Buddha summarizes. So when one understands that the clinging, the grasping, upadana as the cause of suffering, so what he does is he allows this craving to slowly decay, to slowly loosen, or to slowly deplete. And basically, if that happens, sammadanyaya pandita, now he slowly develops further and further the wisdom. Now he sees the jati khayang abhinyaya. Now he minimizes the arising side. Now he minimizes the existence side, the becoming process. Now he slowly stopped. That means basically when we become something, we are born to something. We are born to that. But once he is minimized becoming process, once we minimize that bhavatanha, once we minimize that grasping, then slowly mind starts just maintaining its equanimity. Etan santang, etan panita, yaddam upekka. So therefore Buddha encourages the yogis to maintain that equanimity, to dwell in that equanimity, to dwell in that non-grasping state of mind, to appreciate that as the temporary liberation. Because we may not be able to find out the complete liberation immediately. So through the practice, what we understand at first is a kind of a temporary liberation. We may lose it because still the defilements are available, but that temporary liberation itself become a very strong platform for us to further develop vipassana. So it becomes very much like a battlefield, where various further defilements are arising, but you can completely or quickly notice them and you are able to abandon them very quickly. There may be attachments happen and you are able to quickly trace them and abandon them. Different kinds of upadis can happen, identifications can happen, conceit can happen, but you are able to recognize it very quickly because you are maintaining a non-grasping state of mind as much as possible, very clear mind as much as possible, fairly undefiled mind as much as possible. So that is your sort of motivation, that is your objective, to maintain a mind free from any attachment, free from any grasping. Anisitocha viharati nachakinchi loki upadhiti. So that becomes your motto. Maintaining your life in this whole lifespan without grasping anything in the world, without attaching to anything in the world. So that becomes your kind of motto. And slowly as you continue, that may cause defilements to further dilute, ultimately to drop for good. Okay, with that I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Charan Saranai Bhante.
Yeah, Charan Saranai.
I have a meditation report to present. It's about walking meditation first. I started noting first left, right, and then lifting and placing, and lifting and moving. And after that, after a while, mind stopped that noting and started to observe the cycle of walking. Then I noticed the feet, the heel arch and the ball of feet and the tips of toes touching the carpet, and noticing when the foot was lifted, it was light, and when placed, it was pressing against the carpet roughly. And a number of feelings arising when the sole was touching the carpet, and those feelings passing when I lift the foot. Then also notice the thoughts coming, and sometimes mind not engaging in the thoughts, but sometimes engaging in the thoughts and being able to go back to noting.
Go back to what?
Go back to noting again, uh-huh, as left, uh-huh, right, or
right.
Seeing, yeah. Uh-huh. And then I started to feel drowsy, mm-hmm, and noticed at times I was losing the balance. And after I heard the birds singing as well, and after about an hour, I sat down for sitting meditation. And at the beginning itself, the breath was very subtle, and I was able to notice only a few breaths and was falling asleep.
Mm.
And so I haven't been doing walking meditation much before, but I have been doing a fair bit of sitting meditation. But I recently attended a retreat by the Loka Swami Mahansa in Sydney, and I realized I have to do more walking meditation as well.
Mm-hmm.
So since I started walking and after that sitting, I'm finding that sitting is making me falling asleep. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping you can get me.
Yeah, it can happen, because basically in the sitting practice, so you are not doing much and you simply have to be quiet. That is quite difficult for the beginner, because we are used to do so many things. So we are geared to do, not to relax. So basically we do a lot of things, and that is where the problem happens. So our minds are not used to simply maintain a very relaxed awareness. So it has to be cultivated. So therefore, rather than immediately going to the sitting, if we are continuing kind of walking practice, so that gives us a lot of opportunity to develop certain amount of awareness, develop mindfulness, and even to locate our attention to the required places. So we are in a way training the mind, or kind of developing certain skills, so that we are able to navigate our mind where it is necessary, keeping it very awake. The mindfulness is very similar to awakefulness. We don't have enough of wakefulness at the beginning. So therefore, as you understood, you better do a lot of walking meditation, and later you can get on to what we call the sitting meditation. It won't be a big issue. So once you develop fair amount of mindfulness and fair amount of concentration.
So if I have understood it correctly, Bhante,
mm-hmm,
should I just continue with walking meditation and not do sitting meditation at the moment? So maybe I should do about an hour and a half in walking meditation?
Even that is fine, yes. And once you feel, if you feel a little tired, now rather than sitting, you can simply stand and see whether you are able to maintain your attention within the body. And so that can become another way of looking at things, because while standing, it's difficult to fall asleep.
Okay.
But still, you can do a kind of a body scanning, or you can simply go through from the top to bottom, or see what are the other sensations available throughout your body. So you can do the whole practice while standing as well. Since standing requires certain amount of high awareness, you may not be able to fall asleep.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Much
yeah.
merit to you. I'll try and do that, and I'll report to you after this.
Okay.
Yeah, Sean, you can ask the question.
Hmm.
Sampranaya Swami Nansa, there was a lot of new ons I sort of learned from today's talk. And when you, so today's talk, we talked about different type of upadi or upadana.
Upadana, yes.
Kama upadana,
yeah.
For that matter. So my understanding from today's talk was, say if there are items per se that I am interested, I have wealth, am I to sort of, you know, I can sort of buy as needed and then to enjoy what I needed, but the reason why I'm making this statement is the way I heard when you describe it is about the resources, that certain resources are only available, it is not abundantly available. So for that matter, you know, like I had the greed or for that come, you know, like I wanted to have that, and then another party sort of compete for it. So now we have a conflict because of that. Not just because there is, like, an example, you know, I was thinking while you were discussing this, and there is abundance of, if you have wealth, you can go and buy a latest iPhone 15,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you have enough money to throw around,
mm-hmm.
but not to be satisfied with the certain device that you have.
Yeah.
So I was in the context of thinking that, but today what I learned is it's about a competition, that you're competing for certain given resources, and with that, that I can sort of have a conflict with my opponent, like mm-hmm. A country.
Mm-hmm.
We are fighting for oil reserves. So two countries are fighting for that.
Correct.
So so that is what I learned from today, which I didn't sort of know earlier. And so as the Ditya Upadana as well, you know, like the view of what I learned and somebody, or what I think it is to be right, and a view of somebody else's, I can always get into a conflict saying, no, my view is the right view.
Correct.
Yours is wrong.
Yes.
Never sort of thought in that context, but I was thinking more about you have the view, what is right is right, sort of a global recognition and what is true to be true versus false to be false, but not to mix each other.
Mm-hmm.
So this is within me, I have to sort of choose what is right.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that is not the way I understood today. It is because of views of somebody else's, my conflict, or have a conflict with mine, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, am I understanding it right?
Yes, yes. Basically, yes. Because thing is now, I mean, as we already discussed, so we even pay some amount of money to various commodities is because there is a fair competition. Now, so when there is a higher competition, in order to minimize that, they may put a higher value so that certain amount of people can't afford to that. So that competition become somewhat less. So only the people who can afford may are now going to buy that. So that is also another angle that we can look at it. And on the other hand, if we consider the views, so that is another very strong area we get into attach, and sometimes we can't drop our view even though we are fairly convinced that our view is wrong. my idea is wrong and there may be a better idea than my idea, but still we are unable to drop it, because that view has certain amount of attachment, and there I am identifying with it as a strong personality, and my view, now I am trying to win my view, even though I am fairly convinced that my view is not the best view. There may be an alternative which is much superior or much better than my view, but still now I want to win my view, because if I lose it, then I am losing myself. So that kind of an attitude probably can cause further conflicts, because you are not ready to give it up, you are not ready to surrender, or you are not ready to accept. So these are the causes that sometimes conflicts are there. It's very difficult to sometimes convince the others. And we are giving various reasons, we are giving enough evidences to convince others, because they are so attached to their view. Probably they may little understand that their view is not the best view, but they are not ready to give it up. So we need to understand these are not tangible things, but unfortunately these are the strong attachments.
That is one of the reasons. So because of the conflict, because of the, you know, that can arise, and that arises of that conflict can sort of disturb your mind.
Yes.
And the peace of mind, that's like, I believe that is where it is driving.
Yes,
into.
Definitely, yeah.
Very good. Tunuran Saranai Pante, much merit to you for the great talk, great desana, which I learned something absolutely new.
Okay.
Tunuran Saranai.
Actually, we have prepared a little book on the upadana, the clinging. I have shared with everyone, and you can go to your chat. And actually, it is available in our website also. The name is called Grasping. These are two Dhamma sermons conducted at Kalalgoda Vipassana Meditation Center, and somebody actually in Canada requested to talk on this theme. So we have compiled this book, Grasping. So I have shared the link to everyone. So you can visit your chat box and you can download that as well. And that's a very interesting, what I have discussed today are fairly included in this book as well. Okay, if there are no more questions, then we can wind up the session. Yes.
Deshan raised hand again. I don't know.
Yeah.
Deshan, you can present in your problem.
Thank you. I just downloaded got the link. Swami Nansar, I will go through that. I think that will give me more insight to this talk. Today.
Yes, definitely. Yes. Okay, then we'll... Then we'll wind up the session. And so today also we were able to discuss some Buddha's teachings. And through that we were able to accumulate a fair amount of merits. We share these merits with all celestial beings, all the past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to understand Buddha's teachings. And we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu